Well, I guess I wanted to start by talking about last year. If you talk about Northwest Airlines in 1998, you talk about labor problems. Did you anticipate 1998 would turn out the way it did, given that the contracts were open?
No, I did not. I thought, given the relationships that we had developed throughout the early and mid-90s, that things would go much smoother. And I was really quite surprised. One, that the contract was turned down by the IAM, and I was certainly really surprised that the pilots struck.
What's your response to people who look at the situation from the outside and who are not aware of what it takes to run an airline and what it takes to run a union, but they say, how possibly could Northwest have let things happen this way, and how possibly could people like John Dasburg allow the situation to just fall apart the way it did?
In business, you do the best you can. There's so much of what we do is judgment. And so much of the decisions made by the union leaders is judgment, that from time to time, you don't have a meeting of the minds. And we saw that, remember, 2 years ago where American Airlines flight attendants struck, and within 12 months of that, their pilots struck, and it took a presidential emergency board to halt that strike. It only lasted a few minutes, but they were on strike, and it happens sometimes in this business. It's a difficult industry. It's a difficult industry, I believe, for our employees to understand, not understand their day-to-day work, but understand the economics of this business. The fact of the matter is that we work on some of the thinnest margins of any industry category in the world, and most of the costs are highly leveraged. What I mean by that is if there's a war in the Middle East, the difference between a $1 billion profit and a $1 billion loss can occur in 4 or 5 months. And so the nature of this business is such that it's very easy for our people to misunderstand how close we operate on the margin. And sometimes it's difficult for our unions to understand that. And there was just simply a misunderstanding of what we could afford. We couldn't afford to pay what we were being asked to pay by the pilots, and they struck over it.
I've spent a lot of time over the past couple of years talking with Northwest Airlines employees from all different parts of the company, and the main gripe they seem to have with management seems to be rather basic, and it's that they feel like they saved the airline, they feel like they should be rewarded, and they see executives at the airline, including you, being handsomely rewarded for having turned around the airline so successfully earlier in the 1990s, and they want their fair share. Are they right?
Well, they're right and they're wrong. They're right as to the fact that there's a pie and it has to be shared fairly. And we certainly advocate doing so. We don't declare any dividends. Our earnings are plowed back into the business. They either go into new aircraft or infrastructure or into salaries and wages or other costs. And so there's no leakage. In other words, everything is turned back into the business. We in management are charged with balancing how much goes into aircraft and infrastructure and how much goes into labor rates and benefits. And so in that regard, we try to do our best to have a fair allocation. As to compensation of management, management compensation has for the most part tracked the rank and file compensation. The big difference is in stock options. We receive stock, and if the Dow Jones goes from 4,500 to 9,500, we are going to earn a lot more than our salary or our bonus or any other program we would have. And since the Dow increased so dramatically during the 1990s, all of our stock has increased significantly. And if we exercise those options and sell that stock, we receive very, very large financial rewards. But those financial rewards are not coming out of Northwest Airlines directly. They're a vestige, if you will, of the 1989-1990 period when the company was private and the senior management group were given stock out of Al Checky's, Gary Wilson's, and other stock holdings.
does that explanation work, though, to the average employee, or how do you get that across to the average employee that there are these sort of different groups at the airline, and that, well, you did indeed help save the airline when you agreed to pay cuts and other productivity improvements and this sort of thing. I guess to me it sounds like you're saying what you have for that is a job at the airline.
No, we're not saying that at all. What we're saying is that everyone sacrificed. Incidentally, I took my share of sacrifice also, as did every other employee, from my own salary. Everyone sacrificed, and now the airline is doing well, and now we're going to share the profits of the airline. But we have to share them in such a way that we continue to have an airline. And it may very well be that employees want more than the airline can afford to give them, and at the same time replace jetways and aircraft. And so that's the classic debate. But since we don't declare dividends, it is not in our interest to have a strike or to have poor labor relations. We will do everything we can to generate good labor relationships and to avoid a strike. But what we're not going to do is incur wage rates and benefit programs that lead us to a position where we can't replace our capital stock, which incidentally is not in the employee's best interest, because in 5-7 years, there won't be an airline if we don't replace our capital stock. If your question goes further and how do you explain to the employees how it is that when the stock market goes up, management earns more because the value of their stock options go up with the market, that's very difficult. And I've concluded as a practical matter that I certainly have not found a way to adequately explain it. I don't think the media has found a way to adequately explain it. And if anything, the choice of the words the media use have a tendency, especially the print media, I think, to mischaracterize stock options. And to mischaracterize that part of our compensation. But nevertheless, I have for the moment at least abandoned trying to explain the stock market and stock options.
Looking ahead now to 1999, you go into 1999 having not realized your goal of wrapping up all the labor agreements. In 1998, you have your two largest unions, the machinists and the flight attendants, still without new contracts, both threatening to shut down the airline if they don't get what they feel they deserve. What do you think the prospects are this year for more work slowdowns and maybe even strikes?
We're back at negotiations with the IAM leadership, and I would be I am hopeful that we can take a contract back out to those people represented by the IAM, and hopefully we can get ratification this time. As to the IBT, which the Teamsters represent our flight attendants, we have been in negotiations, but they're recessed, if you will, for the month of January due to not having members of the National Mediation Board available, and we'll begin negotiating again in February. I would hope we can reach an agreement, but once again, we're subject to constraints. There is only so much capital to go around. The airline's earning capacity is only so great. Since we don't declare dividends, we're pleased to have a fair allocation, but we certainly are not going to make a short-term decision that will imperil the airline long-term. We just simply cannot do that. And it isn't in the employee's best interest that we do that, of course.
Are you optimistic personally that you will be able to resolve these contracts without work interruptions?
Well, CEOs are optimistic by personality type, so I always start by believing that we can get things resolved. I certainly miscalibrated in the case of the pilot situation in 1998, but I would certainly hope that as we go into 1999, that the people here at Northwest Airlines recognize that what we're trying to do is best for the airline, which in turn is best for them, and that they have to some extent rely on our judgment, and certainly since they're represented by unions, rely on their union leadership, and hopefully their union leadership and management can reach an agreement. But I cannot imperil the future of the airline.
How personally have you dealt with having all these contract disputes all around you? You're the guy in the picture of in the airline magazine, and there's been a lot of finger-pointing and basically some vilifying of you personally in this all. How do you deal with that?
I, for the most part, simply have to ignore it. I know that what I'm doing is in the best interest of this airline, and I believe that. If I didn't believe that, then I would have a problem, because I'd have to deal with a conscience and a reality that would perhaps be in conflict with each other, what I guess we would call cognitive dissonance. But I don't have any cognitive dissonance. The fact of the matter is that I believe that not only me, but the senior management team have the airline and its customers and its employees all balancing all of those interests, and that we are taking the airline in the right course. I think we took the airline in the right course throughout the 1990s, including the 92-93 period, and we have basically the same management team in place today, and I believe we're still going down the right road and putting together these alliances and taking a global focus so that Northwest Airlines will be one of the airlines that survives long-term as the centerpiece of a global network is all what we need to do. And I believe that we certainly need great customer service, and we need our people to desire to provide that service. And at the same time, we have to balance their financial interests and their desire for benefit packages against what it takes to run the airline. And we're going to do our best.
Have you ever been in a position where you've been the front man, subject to so much criticism as you have been, you know, as a CEO of Northwest Airlines?
No, I think having spoken with some of my colleagues in this industry, the airline industry is almost unique in the hostility that seems to exist between the labor leadership and the management. There is a constant wedge being driven. It's unfortunate, but it's in this industry, for the most part, it's simply the way it is. And if we look back over the last 25, 30 years since deregulation, we can see that pre-deregulation the industry behaved that way. Post-deregulation, it behaved that way. It happens to be wrong. It is not good for the industry because it is not good for our customers. And somewhere along the line, we as a company and we as an industry are going to have to learn that the customer shouldn't pay the price for a labor negotiation. That in point of fact, that negotiation has to take place between management, the union representing the employees and employees, and we just simply can't put the customer in a position where the customer is basically being used in the negotiation. But the industry hasn't learned that. We certainly haven't learned it here. I am preaching it, but so far to no effect.
It occurs to me that Northwest has had a long reputation of poor labor relations, and that up until very recently, John Dasburg and labor relations were good. After you negotiated concessions with these groups of workers, you were sort of a hero with the workers. You were in there rolling up your sleeves, presumably telling them that here's what everybody needed to do to turn the airline around. The airline did turn around. The economy turned around. The airline started making a lot of money. And now you are sort of the villain, even though the contracts being offered are not concessionary contracts right now. And is that disappointing to you?
Yes, it's very disappointing. In 1992 and 93, we did not really negotiate new contracts. We negotiated concessions in an environment in which everyone was fearful. And so my role was viewed as protecting Northwest Airlines from basically external forces, that is the Mideast war and its impact on our revenue because of the fear of terrorism, the high increases in the cost of fuel, the American Airlines pricing initiative, which had a devastating impact on Northwest Airlines, and on and on. And so I was viewed as basically a leader protecting Northwest Airlines from external forces. I had not, prior to this round of labor negotiations, negotiated new labor contracts. And so as a consequence in this environment, and now I was cast as a typical, in quotes, leader of an airline that is the enemy because we want more and they don't want to give it to us, and so they must be bad guys. Clearly, it's the same John Dansburg today as it was in 1992 and 93, and that it had been for 50 years prior to that, or 45 years prior to that. And so the fact of the matter is that I'm just cast in a different light now because I'm playing a different role now, and that is to negotiate contracts prospectively as opposed to concessions in order to save the airline. I'm very hopeful that when this is over and the contracts are in place and we have 4 and 5 years of labor peace, that over that period of time we can focus on customer service and focus on the relationship between everyone in the airline, management, employees, the labor unions, and find a new way of an airline negotiating wages and benefits. If we can't, then we'll be going through this cycle again in 5 or 6 years, and I think that's a shame. And I think long-term it will damage the industry, it will damage the unions, it will damage management, it will damage the employees. And the end result of that in a market society is that an awful lot of people are going to hurt this industry for a very long period of time. So my role for the next 5 or 6 years, in addition to the strategy of Northwest Airlines, will be to do as much as I can to see if we can find a different way of having relationships inside an airline.
How do you go about rebuilding morale and customer confidence? You have the two big unions still without the contracts right now, but there's a feeling here that you are trying to put the pieces back together after 1998 and move on, and certainly a big part of that will be restoring customer confidence, I would assume.
Yes, from the summer of 1996 until the end of the pilot strike, there was a deterioration in our customer service. Again, historically in this industry, this has been the case. It's unfortunate that the customer is basically taken hostage. Once the labor contracts are reached, then the service levels go back, and we can see that at Northwest Airlines. We went from a deterioration of service from the summer of 96 until the end of the pilot strike, and then in the month of October, November, and December, we have had very, very high levels of completion factor and on-time performance. And so the underlying operational structure of the airline has stayed in place. In fact, even during those 2 years, we actually were improving on procedures. And so as soon as the strike was over, the airline really, really exponentially bounced back to a high level of customer service. So that's possible. Recognizing that customer service, that is reliability in the airline industry, is a key to staying in business. We certainly intend to focus on that. And I think it's interesting, if the airline operates well, that is, if it operates reliably, everyone's job is easier. If the airline is unreliable, some of the early sense of that is experienced by the reservation agents, and the reservation agents become frayed because they're dealing with customers that are upset because there's cancellations or misconnects as a result of on-time performance. Clearly, luggage doesn't connect well then, and it kind of has a rippling effect in the entire institution. I talk to employees all the time that tell me that one of the most important things for their morale is once we get back to operating a reliable airline again, that their jobs become considerably easier. And boy, I can certainly understand that, just based on the complaint letters I read. So I'd like to think that as we wrap up the labor contracts and the airline goes back to running at very high levels of completion factor, on-time performance, and with luggage, that in itself will certainly help morale. And maybe a crash in the stock market so none of us make any money would be helpful also.
From a financial standpoint, 1998 was a tough year for Northwest Airlines. You said that you lost $100 million in the second quarter because of the work slowdown, and I think $600 million because of the strike and events leading up to it and then cleaning up after it. Your fourth quarter numbers are due out pretty soon. It's certain to be a net loss. Are you offering any predictions on that or any thoughts from a financial standpoint on 1998?
No, it's against the law for us to speculate on our financial results, so I won't do that.
How about on the first three quarters of 1998?
Well, the first quarter was very strong, and we were pleased with that. Demand was still strong, and while Asia was deteriorating rapidly, it hadn't deteriorated to the point where it was as nearly as bad as it has become. Now we're in the end of, we completed 1998, we're in the beginning of 99, we realize exactly how bad Asia became in the second and third and fourth quarter. We were surprised, as were others, with the rapid deterioration of Japan in particular, which is our, when we say Asia, we really mean Japan 70%, Asia 30%. And we were really quite surprised at how fast Japan deteriorated. And so we have to look ahead now, and Japan isn't going to be Japan is not going to have a sustained negative growth rate, and so at some point in time it'll bounce back, but between now and then Northwest Airlines will suffer disproportionately, because we are disproportionately represented, our business is disproportionately concentrated in Japan when we speak of Asia.
Of all the Minnesota companies, you are probably, if not the most, very close to the top, having the most exposure in Asia and Japan. A couple of years ago, I think you folks were even talking about how you were starting to see effects of, you know, before it was even maybe coined, the Asian flu on your operations there. How do you look at it right now? It seems to me you're probably a little bit ahead of most other players in the industry, because it is such an important part of your business. What is it looking like there now? Has it bottomed out yet?
We don't do a lot of economic forecasting ourselves. We average everyone else's economic forecast. I think many businesses do that. And based on averaging everyone's economic forecast, it looks like that Japan has in fact not bottomed out. But it's conceivable that the average forecast is wrong. We have aircraft that are available to put in the marketplace should business strengthen again, what we call the beach markets, in particular between Japan and Hawaii or Guam, that we would like to see those markets bounce back, and we hope they do, but we're not operating on the airline, we're not operating Northwest Airlines on the basis that they're going to bounce back in the next year, and if they do, that'll be a pleasant surprise to us.
How about the U.S. economy? Some of your competitors have canceled hundreds of millions of dollars worth of aircraft orders in the next several years, presumably because they don't think the economy in the United States will perform real well. Do you feel pretty confident about the economy here?
Again, we simply average the economic forecasts, and the forecasts indicate that the economy in the United States is going to have real growth next year in the 2 to 3 percent neighborhood. That's good growth for an airline. Airlines have a tendency to grow right along with the economy, so we would expect maybe a 3% growth in North America next year. So we feel good about that.
The Continental Northwest Alliance, why is that such a good deal for people, and do you expect that ultimately it will be allowed to go through despite objections from the Department of Justice?
Well, first of all, as to the second half of the question, we believe that the transaction with Continental is with inside the law, and that it should ultimately go through. Now, the Justice Department is litigating, and that'll have to be heard, and then we'll let others decide whether we're right or wrong. But our advisors tell us that they believe that we are totally inside the law in the transaction with Continental. The reason it's important is there are three airlines that are almost double the size of either Northwest or Continental. In a business in which your customers demand that you have broad scope, and in a business in which there are economies of scale in your cost structure. And so therefore, we were trying, and Continental was trying to come up with a method or a transaction or a structure, if you will, that would allow us, that is Northwest, and Continental independently was looking at this challenge, that would allow Continental and allow Northwest to function for our customers as if we were as large as these three very large airlines. And what we came up with is an idea to have a very comprehensive alliance where, for the most part, to our customers, our Northwest customers and their Continental's customers, we were one airline. This would require a almost merger of our frequent traveler programs, common use of facilities, et cetera, et cetera. And we agreed in a negotiation with Continental with us, to do so. It so happens in this particular transaction that there was a very large block of Continental stock owned by a small group of investors, and we at Northwest believe that it would be a mistake to integrate our airlines, Continental and Northwest, as comprehensively as we had envisaged, and at the same time allow that block to be out in the capital markets with who knows whom might be interested in it. And so, therefore, we bought up the block, or intending to buy up the block. We had no interest in merging the two airlines. We felt that the history of merging airlines was a relatively ugly history, and that we felt that a voluntary alliance between two airlines was the more appropriate way to accomplish our objective. So other than acquiring this block of stock to prevent it from being available to competing airlines, for example, after we had fully integrated with Continental, we decided to take it up. We've put it in a voting trust, which provides, we believe, protection to all parties, and we're hopeful that someday it's decided that decision was correct. In the meantime, we are going to go about our business with Continental of doing everything we can to integrate our two businesses.
That's one of the things you're most occupied with in this office right now, is it not, trying to find similar alliances with other airlines, building on what you folks started with KLM 10 years ago?
Well, I think I would just slightly change your comment, if you will, as well as it's a question and an assumption. My first priority is to bring together and to implement the KLM relationship, the Continental relationship, and shortly the Alitalia relationship. If Northwest Airlines is going to survive well into the next century, we are going to have to be part of a major global network. I might say KLM's reached the same conclusion, Continental's reached the same conclusion, Alitalia's reached the same conclusion. And so, therefore, what we have to do is bring all of these airlines together now and actually implement this global network and these bilateral alliances. This is a lot of work. It's very complicated. There are a lot of interests. Each party has its own interest at the table. After all, we are all independent airlines. And once we pull ourselves together and implement that program, we have to bring into the group other airlines that are complementary, that help continue to allow us to reach into markets and provide scope to customers and clients all over the world. And so that is my principal concern. But it's both implementing what we have as well as searching for and bringing other airlines into the network.
There was speculation that you maybe had enough of the airlines business and it might be moving on, but it was announced not long ago that you'd indeed be staying at Northwest Airlines for some time. Earlier in the conversation, you said something about 5 or 6 years. What is your future here, do you suppose?
Well, the 5 or 6 years you were referring to is my view of how long we have to accomplish certain objectives before the contracts become due again. It is that period of time in which we're going to have to deal with Railway Labor Act amendments or changes or what have you, in order to not go through another cycle of labor negotiations as we've been going through now, which is, as you and I both discussed, is very destructive. As to me personally, I have always had an interest in business. I have never had an interest in any one particular business, and so I viewed myself as being a hotel person when I was in the hotel business, and prior to that a CPA consultant, if you will, with Pete Marwick, and now an airline executive. But I'm getting a little bit long in the years now. I'm going to be 56 this month, and my current view is that I'd like to see us turn Northwest Airlines into absolutely one of the great airlines in the world and the heart of one of the great airline networks in the world in the next century, when business is going to evolve into really being totally global as I see it. And I'd also like to play a role in the next 4 or 5 years of hopefully finding a solution to the acrimonious type, difficult type labor relations that airlines have had historically, Northwest has had historically, and as I've just experienced, and having not experienced it in 92 and 93, and having experienced it in 98, it is clear to me that we must find a better way to build trust, a better way to run an airline, a better way to go forward and share the pie, but at the same time do so not at the customer's expense or creating all kinds of anxiety among the people in Northwest.
Thank you very much for your time. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Mark.